D'Addario's Humidipak keeps your instrument between 45 and 55% relative humidity when sealed in a hard case. Humidipak is available in maintain and restore kits for both routine and emergency humidification.
Chris Keys for Premier Guitar, hanging out at the Grand Ole Opry House for the first time in Rig Rundown history, and first time in Rig Rundown history with Hozier. Hozier, how are you doing?
Yeah, very good. Good to see you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for talking to us about guitars and before your show here at the legendary venue.
Yeah, the Grand Ole Opry. Thank you very much.
What a treat.
Thanks for joining us. Yeah,
well, let's dive right into it. Let's talk guitars. What's on around your shoulder right now?
Yeah, this is it's a 59 reissue of a Gibson 330. So I end up using this quite a bit. I find it's kind of between this and another 330 that we have, this gets a lot of action. And I don't know how I first came into it, but I just find it's very diverse. It kind of has the right bite.
There's
a kind of, it's refined when you need it to be, but it just pops, and it has a little bit of tooth to it as well too.
And so you play mainly, if not all the time, with just fingers, right? Finger style?
Yeah, kind of finger style.
And so that really probably lent itself to have such a dynamic instrument.
Totally.
Loud to quiet.
Yeah, totally. I just find, for dynamic stuff, and then gentle when you need it, and then for bending notes, and especially for blues, I just find, it's just being able to like pull a note and pop the string a wee bit. It just gets a lot of work. And
what do you enjoy about hollow or semi-hollow instruments? Because I feel that's, I know that you've played Strats before and the Gretsch baritone, but we'll get to those. But what do you enjoy about the semi-hollow, the hollow body natures of instruments?
Yeah, I think first of all it was one of the first electric guitars I had. Mm-hmm. was a kind of a semi-hollow body or a hollow body, and it was just, maybe it's just that there's a live feeling to it. There's a feeling when it's kind of, there's something nice about that feeling of it wanting to take off and wanting to sing sometimes.
Yeah.
Not always ideal, but there's just aliveness to it. There's an aliveness to it, or there's a kind of a, especially with the harmony, which I find in particular, there's just something about it that it's
almost like the vibrations of the universe, to get real deep about it, but like it's like you can feel that ringing against your body
a little bit. Yeah, you can kind of feel that the guitar is reacting to the sound around it a little bit as well too. And there's just an openness to the sound, and there's a liveliness, and sometimes there's a wildness to the sound depending on what you're playing and how you're playing it. But
do you enjoy the having the P90s in like this particular instrument?
Yeah, I find them really nice. I just find it really diverse for a lot of things.
Yeah.
I find it when it needs to be soft or it needs to be smooth, we can kind of get that out of it. And when I need it to be a little bit more raucous, it can
go there for sure.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
And through these instruments as we go, are they things that you record with too, or are these just touring instruments?
Very much so. So
okay.
this especially on this new record,
Wasteland Baby, which people should check out.
Yeah.
Congratulations on the number one.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
thank you. But Wasteland Baby, this got a lot of studio time, I have to say. The harmony on the previous record, on the first album, was used quite a bit, I believe, and for live playing was used quite a bit.
Can we see the harmony?
Yeah,
because that's kind of what I've first associated with you.
Yeah,
was
totally.
That scene back, years
totally.
Now?
Especially on the previous tour was good, and there's a lot of songs. What I find with the pickups here is they just have a woof to them that nothing else can.
Yeah, and this is an old one. This isn't like a reissue or anything.
I could check with Murd exactly, but this would be like a 60s, or maybe an early 70s.
So there's some magic in those pickups, like you're saying.
Yeah, totally.
Very unique sound.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it was definitely Dan Auerbach who turned me on.
Yeah, the 878s are kind of synonymous with him.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And I was as a teenager, a huge Black Keys fan, and especially around the Rubber Factory was one of the things that just lit, their Rubber Factory album just kind of lit
it sounds lit huge.
Yeah, it's just great.
There's just two dudes making noise.
Yeah, totally.
What do you got inside the guitar? I can see there, is that something type of feedback?
Just exactly, yeah. Okay. It's just to kind of like fill it out a little bit. That was on the previous tour. Again, talking about a hollow body that wants to take off and wants to sing. This, in a fabulous way, really does when you... And we keep our amps as far from the stage as makes sense, just to kind of keep a clean sound on stage and to prevent stuff like that. But the harmony in particular just wants to sing sometimes. And
would you say that this is maybe more towards the first album material, or is it just more if you need a grittier sound, this is it? Or how does this balance between 3:30 in terms of set list usage?
Yeah, less. So there's a few songs that like Arson's Lullaby and like a few kind of real like I think like Angel of Small Death in particular this would get a lot of work for more of the kind of rocky or stompier
ones.
There's
some bark in that song.
Totally. So the kind of barkier songs, as you say, the stompier ones, this gets a lot of love. And there's like there's a song called Nobody on the new record, mm-hmm. which just has that kind of nearly like a lo-fi kind of just fuzzy guitar kind of sound. This just has it just does a job that nothing else that I have to my hands can do, you know.
And is this the instrument you would use live or even recording with Jackie Wilson or Jackie Ann Wilson?
Jackie Ann Wilson is a baritone, actually. So
well, it's a perfect segue.
Yeah, totally. So I think I initially, for Jackie Ann Wilson, I think I had never really played, I'm actually going to move him in. For Jackie Ann Wilson, I'd never really played a baritone before.
Really?
And then when I was recording it, I had a demo of it. I had a demo of it playing it in like E major, and that was way too high to sing, or, you know, it just was a really bad key to sing. And then a friend in a band back in Dublin, a friend called Stevie Appleby, who mm-hmm. was in a band called Little Green Cars, he had this baritone that he'd had at home that he'd never really used. And I kind of borrowed it. I think this still might be the one, to be honest.
So it's on video, he's gonna want it back.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I borrowed it for the studio sessions with Rob for the first album. Recorded Jackie and Wilson on it, and then just have kind of had it with me ever since. You know, so it just I'd never really played or written on baritone, but it's just one of those things that I started to really enjoy it as I did. It's like every guitar wants to. Leans into the certain notes or certain play styles that just beg to be leaned into or just beg to be played. So
it sounds like it's like whether it's instruments or a different type of, in this regard, a baritone instrument is inspiring almost to make new music or songs.
Totally, yeah. And that's kind of the joy of having different guitars and exploring with different guitars, you know. So something that you would play beautifully on another guitar just it doesn't react in the same way. It encourages you to play something slightly differently or in a different play style or whatever. And but Jackie and Wilson, definitely.
What are some other songs that maybe people might, if they see the baritone come out, what might they be expecting?
I'm just trying to think. On Nina Cried Power and on Church as well too, on Take Me to Church, because they're slightly, we play them slightly just below. Like, so rather than tune down an electric, sometimes I would play it on a baritone with a higher capo, rather than tune down electric to, let's say, D or kind of D sharp or E flat. But so usually those two, but it's Jackie is really the main, for me anyway, the main kind of song that I've written for the baritone. Yeah.
Which is funny, you just recently performed with Mavis Staples.
Yeah.
Cry, that was a great performance with the baritone.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That was a treat.
Yeah, totally.
So let's move right along. What else have we got in the boat here?
We have a Rezzodan.
Yeah, that's a custom instrument,
Yeah, and I wish I had more information. I have tried to find, like, because, you know, it's always good to have a spare.
Yeah.
I've tried to find a spare of this. And myself and Mert have looked to the ends of the earth, and to the point where actually Dan Electro themselves actually took this away for a while.
Really?
And I believe had a look at it and looked at its components and made a few based on what this was, because we could not find one similar to it. That we found a lot of similar guitars, but nothing that really had the character that this does. And I've really love this guitar.
How did you come to get it?
I came to get it. It was in my uncle's house, hanging up. I don't know how. I must talk to him. My uncle Liam is a guitarist and a blues player. Loves blues music. And again, I think he gave me like my first electric guitar. This was hanging up in his like den. It wasn't getting a lot of like, he wasn't playing it a huge amount, and he was getting rid of a few guitars, and he had such a collection, and I took a few off his hands, which was my first Strat, and then this guitar in particular, and it just became a kind of a really unique part of the sound on a lot of songs. So like Real People Do, and a lot of the folk stuff, like In a Week, and on the first record, and then. Maybe a little bit on this record too. I'd have to think about layering and doubling.
Yeah.
But it just has a character to it that I haven't found. We haven't found on anything else.
Well, Dan Electro's themselves have a unique character with them, and then a resonator guitar have a unique character. But to combine the two is
Yeah. It's sometimes like
it's a unicorn almost.
Totally, it's nice. So like you'll see people like I think referring to it as a Rezo Dan.
Yeah.
But I think it is a custom. I'm not sure where this was made. Or who did it, but I'd have to check with my uncle. But it was this sweet little find, and I have never found anything that does the job that this does, so I'm thrilled with it, you know.
And it looks like for over in the last boat here, we got like acoustics.
Yeah.
And your oil cans.
Yeah, the oil cans, man.
And I wanted to ask, like on a song like To Be Alone, I've seen you perform that with the Strat. I've seen you perform that with an oil can.
Yeah.
I've seen you perform that with a Takamine.
Yeah, yeah.
What, obviously maybe like a TV show or a radio performance that dictates why you maybe use an acoustic, but for a live performance like tonight or any other concert, what makes you change between a Strat or the oil can?
Yeah.
For like that particular song or just in general?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. So I'll take out an oil can anyway.
Okay. And then
this is for, so this is like a company called Bohemian Guitars, which we came in contact probably in Atlanta, Georgia once upon a time, I think. They had reached out. I was playing it on the Strat, I think, and that's, the Strat is, I do love the Strat. Again, it was like one of the first, again, it was a guitar, that guitar in particular was one I got off my uncle. Mm. I think when I started playing this, it just had, it's just a character. And and it was quite a diverse sound. I think originally we started playing it on a different Bohemian guitar, possibly, but a different oil can. But I just found it was diverse. It did the job that the Strat was doing, and then it just had a dimension to it that was at times just that little bit effed up, a little bit kind of interesting, and just a weird dynamic to it, which I just really enjoyed.
Yeah.
And it was just nice to, you know, when you're doing stuff live, it's just nice to play around with the sound.
Yeah.
And just do something exciting.
To say about a performance, meaning, you know, everyone's seen Strats before, but when you bring out a oil can, there's a particular intrigue that the audience is feeling when they see an instrument like this come out.
Certainly, definitely. And I actually found, I did find that I grew to really just appreciate the company as well, and the way they were kind of conducting business and the way they were making their stuff, and then also just the sound of the guitar itself.
Yeah.
We're putting through the very same kind of rig, so very, very same kind of thing.
Yeah.
So still had a lot of that character, but just this slightly different, it's a very different source maybe, or a very different kind of, you know, it wasn't too drastically different from what we wanted to achieve that the Strat did, but just that little bit different, you know.
Cool.
With the oil can, for live certainly.
Yeah.
And then the Takamine.
Do you ever have any issues? I've never played an oil can, so I don't know if to speak to any.
I'll show you this
eccentrics
one well.
About it.
Yeah.
But does it have any feedback issues, or do you have to worry about anything, or when you're playing through a full rig of two amps and pedals and?
Nothing. We have. We have stuffed these, I believe.
Okay,
so we have
okay.
kind of like, we have...
Something's dampening
it. Yeah, exactly. We've dampened these a wee bit. And I think we've Murta's weighted these as well too. So we did find the neck is heavier than the obviously the body is.
Because so
the body
like a dive.
Yeah, exactly. So because it is quite literally just a hollow can. It is just, it is just a vintage metal. Oil can, essentially, yeah. Yeah. And they follow, I think the way they make theirs is like they follow, there's like a South African street musician tradition of making, you know, guitars out of old mm-hmm. oil cans. They just kind of took that tradition and started making them. And it's all kind of, it's all recycled. Like the straps that come in are seat belts and stuff like
oh,
that.
Oh, cool.
Seat belts. And for every guitar they make, I think they plant a tree. So it's like, I just like...
It's a company you can get behind.
It was nice, yeah, totally. So yeah, we did do a bit of dampening, kind of weighted it as well too, just for ease and comfort, and making sure that it was kind of angled the way. But apart from that, nothing.
Cool.
Maybe a little bit, like there was a little bit of singing, but okay. Like, you know, nothing too uncontrollable, you know.
So I see that you have a few acoustics. Which one mm-hmm. would you say is your main one, or that you use, that you know, when it comes to more softer songs?
The main one is. I think it's this bad boy here. No, that's actually a new one. But I have an older, the eldest P3NY that I have. I think it's
on its way to
Australia. It's on, yeah. So yeah, it's on the way to Australia at the moment.
What do you look for in an acoustic guitar?
Oh my goodness!
Needs
sorry.
As a guitar player.
I used to play a lot of like slide when I was first learning how to play guitar mm-hmm. and then it kind of, I don't know how I fell into this, but like certainly into the P3NY. I was never a big fan of the parlor shape,
yeah,
until I found a P3NY. There was a softness to it and a sweetness to it that I really, really enjoyed, and just the playability to it for acoustic guitar. I think it's more because I really fell in love with that guitar in particular. I've just gravitated more towards guitars like it. But mm-hmm. so you won't see, we have another guitar there that Suzanne Santo plays in the set, and it's a spare for when we do promo and stuff like that.
Okay.
But during the set I'm really only on the P3NY, just different tunings of it. I think when I was learning I would have had juggernaut shapes and stuff like
yeah.
that. I would have had but I've been quite simple. Like what I found with this was, I found it easy as I was learning. Like I maybe got this when I was a younger, much younger teenager, mm-hmm. Or the original, my earliest one. I found it easy for slide playing. I found it easy for open tuning as well too. So I think that was a huge part of it. In fact, I'll just show you an open tuning. And I think there's a sweetness to this guitar.
What are some of the open tunings that you do utilize when it comes to fingerstyle with the acoustics?
Yeah, so it depends on the song. Okay. So some are open G. So I found on the first record there was a bit of open G. On this is a song for Shrike.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that tuning because it sounds very, there's a lot of ringing strings that are going
on
that.
Yeah, totally. So that for Shrike, that's open C.
Okay.
And that's actually the first time I started writing with open C was around this record. It's just, again, it was just something nice for the hands to find out new shapes and to, you know, to do something different. And the song called As It Was as well too, which is, you know, that's also open C. And then, so really enjoyed that. And then a few songs open G and open D as well too.
All right.
So, and D minor, I have to say, open D minor, which, for stuff like Nothing Fucks With My Baby and what's this from the previous, It Will Come Back and stuff. So when I was doing a bit more slide, and it was because, you know, I'm not a great guitar player. I was never really, I kind of taught myself, but I started with slide stuff, and so for me open tunings was kind of how I
kind of a gateway.
Exactly.
Well, the last question I ask you, Jose, before we move on and we'll start talking to Mert about amps and effects is, it's so crucial, but I think it's overlooked, is how do you take care of your fingernails, because it is such a crucial sound,
yeah.
part of your sound.
Yeah, on the last tour, I used to use like a shellac sometimes, or mm-hmm. like I'd do anything from super gluing my nails together before a gig because they were just cracking and falling apart,
yeah.
To like shellacking these in particular, and I would use, let's say, these would be a little bit, you know, I would use those as a,
because you will use that, yeah, as like a pick almost.
Or if it's Jackie and Wilson, where the strings are obviously a heavier gauge, a baritone, I'm just hammering it. I don't know. I think I don't know. I just get away with it. I don't, like at this on this tour, I kind of try to keep them. If they're too long, they're gonna break.
Yeah.
So there is a sweet spot I find. So I'm just trying to keep. I don't even file them. I kind of just keep them at a sweet spot. I find if they're too long, they'll get in the way of picking.
Yeah.
If they're too short, I'm gonna cut my fingers.
You're not gonna get it.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Or totally. Or it's gonna be muffled, or I'm gonna cut my fingers. So it's just keeping that sweet spot. And there's only one or two songs. A lot of the time I'm picking with my skin anyway, so it's like, you know.
Very percussive.
Yeah, exactly. So it's very rare that I'm even, you know, it's really Jackie and Wilson and a few other songs where I'm really, even to be alone and stuff, mostly it's picking with my fingers. So the nails don't on the previous tour, I think they got a bit more
abuse.
Of a workout. Yeah, exactly.
Well, Hozier, thank you so much.
Thank
we're going to talk to your tech now. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
All right, everyone. We're here now with Mert, who we just got done talking with Andrew about his guitars. Now, Mert's the man behind the scenes, behind, you know, taking care of the amps and pedals. So, Mert, how are you doing?
It's very well. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Thank you for talking
Great
with us,
pleasure
man.
To have you guys.
Not only at the Grand Ole Opry, but, you know, you guys allowing us to come backstage and hang out before the show. So, I appreciate
you're more than
that.
Welcome. More than welcome. Yeah.
So, let's start talking business. Amps. What's Hozier using?
Hozier, at the moment, you're using Vox AC30, the hardened hand word. Okay. Vox AC30 hand word.
Okay.
And Fender Basements 4x10s.
And are they both running at the same time, or is it kind of like he switches between them, or is it dual?
Both run same time all the time. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what does he like about the Fender, the EL84 versus the 6Ls?
We get the grunt out of the AC30s, and we get the sparkle out of the basement.
Okay.
And it's
And are you plugging into the normal channel, or are you using the top boost channel?
We're just using normal channels.
Okay.
And are
they all 12-inch speakers?
No, the AC30s are 12 inches, and then the basements are 4x10s.
10s, okay.
Yeah.
And I noticed when I peeked back behind there, you guys had the aux running, and it made a splash at NAMM. But what, as a real-world user, what do you enjoy about using it?
What we like about it is, because everybody's on in-ears, it gives us the consistency of the same thing every day. I mean, when we were using microphones, you're depending on the room, your positioning, where you get your amplifiers. If you're getting to get a big boomy space, or you're going to have to try and kind of deaden it down, and it was inconsistent. Whereas with these, we get the same thing every day, and we know, you know, there's no no need to change anything.
Yeah.
Really, you know what I mean?
No guesswork.
Yeah.
So now that he doesn't use reverb on the amps, I got to imagine he's got to have reverb on the pedal board.
We use a couple of reverbs. The main reverb, which we run most of the time, is the Hall of Fame.
Okay.
And then for the bigger things, we use the Cathedral that he introduces every now and then. I mean, a big part of his sound is the Memory Man, which, strangely enough, we have first in the chain in this whole thing, because it's so sensitive to, you know, the input on these is so sensitive.
Yeah.
So I like to run it first and then have everything else after it, so that we don't overload it when we...
And that looks
in.
To be an old unit. Like
that's an old unit, okay. Yeah.
So she's probably finicky.
They're finicky. We have about five of them on the road.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Cool. So the Hall of Fame, is that set to a particular setting in
it's,
that regard?
It's just a plate. It's a plate.
Okay.
Just a plate reverb. Yeah. I mean, we use it as a kind of a short reverb and just to kind of put a little sparkle on things. And then for the bigger thing, we use the Cathedral just for the longer reverbs and stuff like that. So,
will that get stacked on top of the Hall of Fame, or is it the,
no,
the Hall
it's,
of
Fame's it's,
off?
It's either one or the other.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the way we run it, yeah.
Well, walk us through what else you got going on here.
What else we got going on here? Mainly, a whole load of distortions. I mean, Andrew's big thing is it's either really clean or overdriven. So,
dynamics.
You know, dynamics. So we have the Mud Honeys, which are a favorite. And the reason I have two of them is because with the Bradshaw system, I can only have one channel on one loop, you know. So we have, you know, channel one and channel two. We use them over two loops on the Bradshaw so that he gets the option of having both sounds.
Okay.
And then we have an Alberta, which is more of a bluesy kind of overdrive, which we use with the oil cans and those type of guitars. And then we have an OCD, which is a new pedal that we've introduced, which is becoming very much a favorite. An old Big Muff as well in there, just for kind of lines and stuff like that.
Yeah, one song I particularly I hear live that he really has some overdriven tone is like Jackie and Wilson.
Jackie Wilson,
something
that's a tube screamer.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is that something that's more like a taste thing, or is a tube singer always kind of pushing the amps? Or is it kind of like in between, he chooses when to put it on?
That runs the whole way during that song.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, one of the big things with that as well is that it's the baritone guitars we
and
use
that
for that.
Yeah.
That gives it the kind of growl as well, you know.
And is the Alberta used, you mentioned that with the oil cans, is that to give them a little bit more equilibrium in terms of the volume? Because those probably maybe
no, it's not a balancing. I mean, well, we have them all pretty kind of balanced out,
okay,
sound wise, but just for a little lift in when he does licks on it and stuff like that. Okay. Yeah, that's kind of it's, and the pog is the octave. That's kind of an experimental thing that we're kind of putting
really?
In there. We won't go into that too much. It's not working out. It's gonna go.
Is that a you decision or is that a whole decision?
We will get there. It will be an hour decision eventually.
Gotcha. And the fuzz is just mainly kind of when he's really feeling kind of go for really raunchy rock.
I mean, he doesn't rock out really, you know. A lot of what his tone is, you know, like I say, the overdrive sound, which is kind of, it's hard to describe, really, you know.
You just got
to
experience it.
You got to experience it. There you go.
I see the small little two boxes. I believe those are exotics. Are those
exotic line boosters. Yeah, we use those on the clean sound just to lift them when he's doing little kind of, you know, fingery parts, you know, and stuff like that. We use one which has the vintage set in it. And then there's a little dip switch inside that you can sweep them between vintage and default, which is their more modern sound. And we use them as that. So there, yeah.
Is that something that maybe gets used for different guitars or just sound thing?
It gets used all across the board, really.
Okay.
Yeah. Sometimes different guitars, but it depends on what parts of the song, you know, kind of it's like kind of say the intros where he's doing a kind of a finger picking thing that he wanted to just give that a little lift and then, you know, take it off when the chords come in, you know, and stuff like that.
Yeah. Understand.
Yeah.
And I see that last thing I think we haven't covered is the LR bag stuff up there.
Yeah, well, we use that for the acoustic. This is the acoustic guitar LR bags, which we just basically, we run this through the Bradshaw as well. So that means we can use the same, we don't use wireless or any of that stuff. It's all cables.
Uh-huh.
So I can use the same cables for the electrics and the acoustic. And we just have a switch on the board, which brings up the acoustic. The other one, we have a feed off of this board, which is, we use it as it's a line out, a clean line out. To front of house. That he keeps for record, that if we want to kind of do anything afterwards with anything, we can reamp it and add some different effects to it or whatever. It's just a kind of it's more for like we would depend on it more for TV shows and stuff like that.
Oh.
In case a pedal
we
had a problem with during the take or something, that we could actually go in and just recreate it.
Gotcha.
Afterwards or whatever.
And is there anything that's unusual? Because you had mentioned that the memory man's in the front of the delay. Is there anything unusual in terms of the wiring of things or how things are
that's,
stacked?
That's probably the most unusual.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, everything else is pretty much as normal, you know. The distortions will come after the memory man, and then all the delays and reverbs or whatever go at the end. It's been solid and, love it.
It's great.
Yeah. So, we have two of them. We have one here and one in Europe, and we kind of jump from one to the other, and it's been seamless at the moment,
So
far, so good. There you go, yeah.
Well, Mert, thank you so much for
talking
gear.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
This is Chris
Keith
for Premier Guitar.